All right, welcome to the 61st episode of the Parents Initiative Podcast. This is your host, Leo Colon, and I have our co-host, Rebecca, with us.
Hey, 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 everyone.
We want to congratulate you for taking the time to listen because you are making parenting a priority. You're saying you want to grow. So congrats to you for making that decision. Today, I want to go ahead and dive right into this episode because we have a special guest joining us. Mm-hmm. I was connected to this guest through a mutual friend. Checked out his website and Facebook profile, and I knew that this is someone that we definitely had to have come on. Yeah. So his name is Ryan Roy. He is a husband, father, coach, speaker, and best-selling author. So Ryan, if you could, can you take a few moments to introduce yourself to our audience? Let us know a little bit more about you and what you're all about.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me, both Rebecca and Leo. I'm excited to be on today's episode. As you said, I am a coach. I own the company Justifier Just Do It. I help people take massive action in their life to achieve whatever way they define success. I am a husband to my amazing wife, Lisa. We're 10 years now. We have two amazing boys, both 9 and 3. And, you know, best-selling author of the book, Be the Dad You Wish You Had. The reason I wrote that is because I take this parenting journey very seriously as I was abandoned by my own father at 5 years old. So I just wanted to switch that around and be fully present with my own kids and you know, define what it looked like to be a good dad for myself.
Wow. So you were abandoned at 5 years old.
Yes.
Wow. And how, I mean, I'm kind of going off subject.
It's okay. I hit you with one there. Sorry.
No, I didn't know that. So how did you process that? I mean, like as a young kid, how did you process that? And then you become a father yourself now. So how does that, I mean, how did you process that as a kid?
Yeah. So, you know, the way it happened was, it was a couple weeks before Christmas and, I was laying in bed with my mom. Our parents had already been divorced. And basically I was telling mom what a great kid I was. And I was telling her all the presents I wanted under dad's tree and all the presents I wanted under her tree. And, she paused and she let me know that, I'd no longer be going to my father's house.
Wow.
Then she reassured me that all the presents would end up under her tree. I think that was her way of comforting me at the time, as moms do. I've done a lot of work around this moment as it's a pivotal moment in your life, right? And as I was going through a process, somebody asked me, what did you do in that moment? How did you react? And my response was, I think I was just strong for my mom, which is no burden that any child, much less a 5 year old, should ever have to take on. And, but that's how I responded, right? And then he asked, how does that show up in your life today? And I said, well, I kind of tend to be strong for other people. So you asked me, how did that play out in my life? It's interesting because I don't think I ever put a lot of thought into it. I think I just needed to be strong. Went through life in adolescence, single mom, right? At that point, raising 5 kids. There were challenges financially. There were challenges with my older siblings as I was the baby, in and out of trouble, we'll just say, in various ways, whether it's getting in trouble with the law or drugs or alcohol or whatever they were doing. And we just had our challenges. But because of those challenges, as I became a young adult, I think I made a conscious effort that I didn't want to be a dad. And I don't think it was because, hey, I wouldn't be a good dad. I didn't know what it looked like to be in a healthy relationship. And I had women in my life and I had a 4-year relationship with a high school sweetheart. Had another 8-year relationship where I didn't want to be committed because I didn't know what commitment looked like. I remember she wanted to have children. And I was like, I'm not having kids. And, you know, and if you're looking for someone to marry you, the marriage isn't for me. I had that kind of garbage going on in my life. But literally made that serious conscious decision to not have children until I met my wife. And I was going through some just life stuff at the time. And I wasn't talking to God at the time. I didn't have a relationship with God, as I'm new to the faith, as I say it. I'm kind of outside of toddler now. I'm like an adolescent, almost 5 years now since I gave myself to the Lord. So I got to start growing up here a little bit. But I had a conversation with myself again right before Christmas, and I was going through a rough patch. I've never been an abuser of drugs or no addictions or anything, but I was going through a rough patch financially. I had to file for bankruptcy at one point because I went through the real estate challenges of the, you know, late 2000s. And I spent the better part of those 6 months wallowing at a bar, to be honest. And I had a conversation with myself, and I know God was listening. Because I wasn't talking to him, but he was listening. And I said, hey, I on January 1st, I get my life together. And on December 28th that year, I'm a big football fan. I went to the same bar to watch my team play. And my wife walked in that day. And I didn't know she was going to be my wife. And she was wearing my team's jersey. And she sat a couple bar stools down from me, and she was with some friends and things. And it's so interesting because we started talking, whatever, exchanged information. And I told you January 1 was going to be the day that I changed my life. Well, I think God placed her in my life because we agreed to meet. We exchanged information. We agreed to meet at a party where for New Year's Eve, where a bunch of other people were meeting. So our first date literally was New Year's Day in the middle of the night. Cause I had to work and I showed up late. It was her birthday. Right. it's just interesting how God puts people in our life and how he's always paying attention and listening. Long story shorter. You know, we started dating and it started getting serious a couple months down the road. And I remember she had this, she says, hey, obviously we're growing affectionate towards each other. This is more than just having some fun. I have a serious question to ask you. And I said, well, what's that? She says, how do you feel about children? Mm. And I'm no dummy, right? I'm not the smartest guy in the world. But I was smart enough to ask a good question back, like, well, how do you feel about having kids? Because I knew how I felt, right? And she says, well, I just want you to know the doctors told me there's less than a 5% chance of me ever having children.
Wow.
So if that's a deal breaker, I just thought it'd be fair to let you know up front. I mean, I did like a fist bump internally. I think I did a backflip because the woman I'm falling in love with, right? Has in my mind, doctor said 5%, my mind, a 0% chance of me ever having to face my greatest fear of that is becoming a father. Not too far after that, I proposed. Not too long after that, we decided to elope and get married. And on our wedding night, it came up again. You know, what do we want to do about this kid thing? I said, listen, let's just enjoy each other. Let's just have fun. Like whatever happens, happens. Because I, in my heart of hearts, knew I was with the right person.
Yeah.
6 weeks later, she's pregnant. And it was, guess what day that we found out we were pregnant? New Year's Eve. Wow. 2 years later from when we met. And the day before her birthday. So we're literally getting ready for New Year's and she's like, I'm gonna take a pregnancy test. And I was excited because I knew I was with the right person, but I was also still scared, right? Because so many people say, I'm not going to be like my father. And what was my father? He was absent. And I think that's when I defined that I'm going to be the dad I wished I had.
Yeah.
And what does that look like? And I started Googling it. I didn't know what it looked like to be a good father. I literally Googled, what does it look like to be a good father? And I started taking those, you know, nuggets and Googled more and read more articles and read magazines and listened to podcasts and did all this research. And I just started piecing together what I wanted to be as a father. And that's kind of where the book comes in. It's 40 lessons of things I've done. They're not unique ideas from me, but maybe how I implement them are unique and from my own space.
I love the way that kind of worked out.
Yeah.
Just the kind of way it just kind of just flowed into, you know, what we wanted to kind of hit on. You know, and I love what you said. You had a conversation with yourself. You know, you made a decision, you know, and then you took ownership in a place where you didn't have a father necessarily, you know, that wasn't present, but you decided. And I think that's key, especially those that are listening to this, that, you know, I could say that I somewhat came from a broken situation as well. But I made that conscious decision that I'm going to be the best dad that I can be. Not that I'm perfect, but I'm going to do my best every day to show up. And I love that you said that, because there are people listening to this that came from a broken home that don't know what to do, but they need to make a decision and start taking some action.
And I love that you turned what was painful and let it drive you to live a purpose-filled life every day. That you didn't allow that broken moment to leave you broken, to go break other things, but to be a person that's gonna be a restorer and a redeemer, in a sense, redeem your legacy and create a heritage that your boys are never gonna know that sense of abandonment or brokenness. But they're going to have a lot of great tools in their life and a lot of great stories and memories that is forever going to impact the generations to come now. So it's powerful.
Thank you for that.
Of course, man. And for those of you that have been following us for quite some time and listening to our podcast, you know that we keep things very basic. And one of the things I love about Ryan is that he really gets down to the nitty gritty and hits on some key things, some key things that we never really discussed on our podcast.
No.
So I know 40 power lessons to become a powerful dad. We're not going to be able to cover all of them, but Rebecca took the time to look through his book and has some things that we would like to kind of hit on.
Well, the first one that I wanted to for you to kind of speak a little bit more about, I actually had learned from a pastor's wife when I was at Bible school. And I took note of this to do this and implement this whenever I had children. And so speak to the fact of why not to use baby talk and how you speak to your kids and why you do that.
Well, first of all, I'll give credit that one to my own mother. She said, I never talked to you kids like you were children or goo goo gaga or any of that stuff. And the reason I didn't is because I wanted you to be able to enunciate words. And if the first time you're hearing words is somebody doing it in a dialect that they think you can understand, you're going to learn and grow. You're going to understand. Why would I want to make it sound any different to bring you down? Or like you're a person who is growing and learning every day. I want you to learn right from the get-go. I want you to understand how to enunciate words, which, and I'll just tie this into the very last lesson, which is to read to your kids daily. So many parents will, well, when do you start reading to your kids? I say, when they're in the womb.
Yes. Yes.
And, well, what do I read to a kid in the womb? Whatever you're reading, just read it out loud. They need to become comfortable with your voice. They need to be comfortable with how you talk in regular tones, and reading out loud is going to do that for them and for you. You know, I don't think I've ever really shared this, but one of the things I had a challenge with in school is I hated reading out loud. Hated it. I mean, a lot of things in school came really easy and natural to me, but when I compared myself to other kids reading, it was something that I wasn't as proficient in. I absolutely love that I get to read to my kids out loud, because it's better, made me a better, never had a problem reading, comprehension, any of that. I wasn't comfortable with it. So reading to my kids out loud has just made me a better person.
Yeah.
it made me more comfortable with reading out loud. I even see the difference between, you know, when, because I'm reading the same books from 6 years ago, right? The same books. I used to stumble through this a little bit because I just wasn't comfortable in my own skin. And now I just, not that I read it then and I'm comfortable with that book. I'm just comfortable with everything because my kids have allowed me to grow through that.
Yeah, I love that. And being able to kind of touch on one more, you know, as you're in that a communication is how to communicate and talk about, you know, eye contact and things of that nature, because it's so important.
Yeah. So I love this. And I actually coach people around this because we're on a Zoom and I know this is going to be audio, but we're looking at each other. And I love this about your platform. You may not even realize how important it is, but you're at eye level with me, right? My computer is eye level to you. I am not above you. You are not below me and vice versa. And it means we're creating each other equals and there's an equal amount of respect there. This is very important in communication with adults, but even more important with kids. Because if you're, so I say in the chapter is talk at eye level, right? So children, and as early as you possibly can, when my little ones were down doing tummy time, I wasn't over them doing tummy time. I got down with them and I talked to them. I encouraged them, lift that little head up, go try and put that, you know, hand forward, do those things, but do it at eye level because they feel, right? There's so much feel at a young age in the first 5 years of development. They're dealing with all of their senses at a heightened level. So to feel comfortable, to feel equal, we know we're superior if you want to use it that as adults and as their parents, and we're there to protect them and guide them, but they don't know that. So the more comfortable they are, the greater chance they have the ability to grow. So even if you're reprimanding them in a certain way, right, just come down to eye level, talk to them and talk to them as if they understand now, which is a whole other one. But hey, do you know what you did wrong? What age do you do this at, Ryan? You do it from the beginning because you as parents need to get comfortable with this dialogue so that when it really comes into play, you have practiced it hundreds, if not thousands of times.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, go
ahead. I love that because I mean, that's one of the things that we do with our kids. We want them to take ownership,
yeah.
You know, to learn from their situation and break it down with them. You know, sometimes it can be painstaking to do that, mm-hmm. but it takes a lot of patience on your end to do it. And I love that you have that.
And it kind of leads into the next topic, you know, of giving clear direction. I love that. I love how you talked about don't use the word don't and then what they need to do.
Yeah, no, nobody knows. So I do this in coaching with adults. We're just big kids, right?
Yes.
But we've all been kids. So if we could bring it down to that level, you right. remember when you were a kid, but with our own kids. So the example I use in the book, there's so many of these. You tell a kid not to run in the house, right? And kids are kids. I'm like, okay, well, I was having fun running. What else can I do that was fun? And they might start stomping in the house. And then you're like, do not stomp and do not run. Okay, you just told them what not to do. And then they're like, okay. And they start skipping. And then it's like, da-da-da-da-da-da. You're like, no. Right. No, don't stop. Don't. And then you do it. And then they go, okay. And then they just start rolling. What are you rolling? But if you tell them what to do and you give them a clear direction, please walk in the house. You want to run, stomp, do any of that? You could do that outside, but walk in the house. What is their other option? Nothing is clear.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll give you a scenario. I had my at the time, he was about 9 months old, my second child, and he was going towards the fireplace. And the fireplace wasn't on, but it's not a place that I want him feel comfortable being around, right? Because it was getting to that point of the year where we'd be turning on the fireplace. And I thought to myself, Ryan, you wrote a book around this. What do I need him to do? What do I need to say? What do I need to say? What do I need to say? Like, because I didn't want to say no, because that's another, right? No, don't be by the fireplace, right? Because I'm saying no, and I'm saying don't all in the same sentence, but that's our natural instinct, right? That's what people have been doing to us. So we just do it. So there's a level of consciousness around all of these lessons. I said, well, what do I want him to do? I want him to walk away from it. So how do I get him to do that? And he was 9 months and he had just started walking. And I said, Jaden, come to daddy. And he just mosey on over, right? And came to daddy and like, what do you want to do? So I just kind of tickled him. Like, thank you for coming to daddy. Thank you for listening, acknowledging all that. I started tickling him. He's cracking up, whatever. I'm like, dad, you are awesome. And what does Jaden do? He goes right back over to the fireplace. And I say, hey, Jaden, come over to daddy. And we did this two or three times before he went on and did something else. So what's the lesson in that? I didn't yell at him. He didn't get reprimanded. Nothing happened. We had some tickle time. We laughed. We had some bonding. He got acknowledged. All of this, and it all happened in a 3-4 minute period.
Right.
And he went about his day, and I got the result I wanted because I consciously took a strategy that was positive instead of telling him what not to do.
I love that.
So I just want to make sure our audience caught that. You did that at 9 months old.
Yeah, he was 9 months old.
Yeah. And that's huge.
Yes. Learning how to affirm and to really switch to a positive light instead of like always going towards the negative is very powerful. And I always tell people, you reward things that you want to see repeated. And so I love that you have a section in your book that's reward behavior you desire.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that kind of go along with what you were saying.
100%. So in that scenario, he did it. I acknowledged him for it. I did it at eye level as I'm thinking back to the scenario.
Right.
I tickled him, right? Who doesn't like to be tickled? You know, as long as we don't overdo it. Stop tickling me, daddy.
Really
okay. Funny. And then you dig right back in, right? Yeah. Because I stopped. You didn't tell me I couldn't restart. But it's anything. So I often with both boys, but I think back to Christian Moore is whenever I rewarded him, I always reminded him why he was being rewarded. And the statement was why are you getting this ice cream? Why did you get that sticker? Why did you just get this new toy? And his response always would be, because I'm a good boy. Mm-hmm. I said, that's right. You are a good boy. And what did you do good to deserve this? Right. So I took it a step further. And then he would tell me, I was like, sometimes it'd be things like, oh yeah, I forgot you did that.
Yeah.
But he told me, mm-hmm. And as long as he understands that that's the behavior I desire and he's being rewarded for it. It's but so many people just want to take away. What do most parents do? You're not going to get that play video game. You don't get dessert. You don't get this. You don't get that. No. Well, what do I get? Again, it goes back to what do I get for being this way, as opposed to what are you taking away if I behave poorly?
Yeah, I love that. So if we focus on rewarding the things we want to get repeated more so, there will be a lot less reprimanding needed to be put out.
Yeah. There's for the longest time, I honestly with him and all parents, because I have a second one and I wrote the book on parenting. He is a whole other ball of wax, you know, and I used to think when I had one, why do people not get this stuff? This is really simple. I mean, I'm just you know, but now I have another one and he's quite the opposite of his brother. His other brother got timeout like twice ever. This one lives in timeout. The other one, this is the funniest story. Daycare. My son was there from 1 year old all the way up till he went to elementary school, right? So he goes to school and he probably about 4 years old, 5 years old. I walk in and another dad has a pink slip in his hand and you know, he's talking to a teacher and he's a dad that I got along with. I said, well, what's that pink slip? And he literally, for those of you who aren't watching, like he had this piece of paper in his hand and he literally looks down at it. He looks back up at me. He goes, really? I said, what? I don't know what that is. He goes, he looks at it again and he looks at me and he goes, you don't know what this is. I was like, no, what is it? I got a stack of these at home. I said, so what is it? He goes, I get like one or two of them every single day. It's whenever he does something he's not supposed to do or something they need to report. Now, mind you, they've been friends for 3-4 years at this point. He's like, how does your son not have one of these? Jaden, you can't get one of these until you're at least 1 year old, right? Like, so Jaden went in at 9 months. the first day after his first birthday. And for every day for about a month, he got one. Mm. And his brother never got one ever. So much so, my wife thought it was so bad that she thought we were going to have to hire a nanny or something because that the school was going to kick him out. I said, they're not going to do this. It's normal behavior at his age. Like, I had to go in and talk to him. I was like, please, can you call my wife and let her know that we're family? You're not kicking family out. We've been here for all day. And she's like, oh, she really was thinking. She's looking to hire a nanny because she thinks you guys are going to kick him out. So you got to handle each kid different ways, but the tactics still work.
Right.
But who they are as human beings, they have their own uniqueness. I'll say it that way.
Yeah. Well, another way you say the tactics, because I think, you know, the biggest thing, you know, we both see eye on this is that the being consistent, regardless, yes. You know, for our daughter is a little more hardcore and our son's real sensitive, you know, mm-hmm. This is the way they are. So, you know,
daughter's the younger one.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Makes sense.
That's just the difference between them two, you know, and just having to navigate that. And I love that.
The difference between the first child and the second child too. First child typically is the one who is the pleaser of the parents. They want to like make sure everything. And then the second child is the one who is more testy because he or she has an older sibling. The dynamic of the house, parents aren't as hovering or like, oh, I have to do this right. Like, hey, we kind of been through this. We let a little bit more go because we kind of been through it. And they get to experiment and get to test us a little bit more.
One's a boy, one's a girl. And the boy is the oldest. And, you know, he's 15, she's 9. So there's a huge difference in, you know, and that goes. So, you know, and she's a lot like me. She's on all the time. Yeah. So,
could you try again?
Siri apparently wants to join in the conversation.
Hey, you know, Siri could join in.
So talk a little bit about the activities and, you know, games, puzzles, you know, being active with your kids, you know, in the different levels of ages and how important that is.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to some people just, I think, oh, what do I do with a 5-year-old? What do I do with a 6-year-old? Like they're sponges. They could do just about anything and be entertained. Right. So what are things that are going to take some time and really take process, right? In today's world, right? Microwave society, I could call it, you know, we hit a button, we could get on Google. I just opened a trading account for my son the other day. It took me like 3 minutes to send my money across so I could buy some stock that he wanted to buy. I'm like everything happens instantaneous, but in this world, right? Relationships cannot be rushed. Right. Our careers cannot be rushed. Yeah. Things in this world cannot be rushed. And our kids must learn process. So the way I like to do that, or the way I've done it in my house, is I love puzzles. Right. And I'm not talking, you know, the 16 piece puzzle. I'm talking a 500 piece puzzle, a 1,000 piece puzzle that take weeks of sitting there. And from early ages with both boys, hey, let's do a puzzle. And you dump it all out. All they can do, you know, at the early age is really flip the pieces. Mm-hmm. Find an edge piece for me. Find some edge pieces. Start sorting some colors. Start doing this. But they see it takes dedication, you know, like an hour every evening. And dad's sitting there and they're sitting with me. We're having a conversation. But then they're like, oh, I found one. Oh, here's one. Oh, can you separate this? Where does this go? They're understanding process, but they're appreciating the process.
Yeah.
The other thing is I say paint, color, draw. Same thing. You know, I'm not much of an artist, but I have a little bit of skills. And my son one day is like, can you draw me Mickey Mouse, Dad? And I was like, yeah, we have some paper. And I drew a Mickey Mouse and it actually turned out pretty good. And then he says, well, can you make me Buzz Lightyear? Can you do me McQueen? And can you do this? And next thing you know, I'm drawing all of them. And are you done? Are you done? But it was taking me 4, 5, 6 hours to draw them because I was drawing them big and to scale. And I'm outlining it and then I'm, you know, erasing and then I'm color coding and I'm making deep lines and outline. And he's like, wow. And I'm like, yeah, it takes time. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I think he learned through this process and some of the best feedback we still get to this day is Christian is the most dedicated student. You give him an assignment, he sits there and he takes it and he doesn't stop until he's finished. Right. Like the other kids are like, hey, it's recess time. He's like, can I finish? I'm almost done. Because he understands it takes time and it takes process, and he's willing to go through that process from start to finish. And I think that's attributed to the drawing and the puzzles and the things at an early age.
I love that because, I mean, it gives you an opportunity to make a connection with them. And it's not like they're sitting there being forced to necessarily talk to you. In their mind, they're doing this activity, but it gives you a good opportunity to start having some conversation with them without mm-hmm. them thinking that you're trying to, you know, put them confined in a place.
Yeah.
And it creates that conversation.
Now, one last thing before we move on to like the next topic. I love this because we have talked about not to be a helicopter parent and all these different things. So talk about why it's so important to allow your kids to take risks.
Because they need to fail. It's and so people, so let's elaborate on that, Ryan, right? So I love playgrounds, right? Which is another one, but I love kids. I love playgrounds. What I don't love about playgrounds today is there's no seesaws. There's very few swings. There's no merry-go-rounds because helicopter parents have gone and said, let's remove these things because kids get hurt. Kids are supposed to get hurt. If kids aren't getting hurt, that means you're bubble wrapping them. That's another thing, right? It's this helicopter and bubble wrapping. And if they don't learn lessons or take risks or have any failures, right? And there's no such thing as failure unless you quit. But so many of these kids just quit because, no, you can't do this. No, you can't do this. No, you can't. Oh, you're going to get hurt. Don't climb on that rock. My kid's a kid that's like bouncing from rock to this, to that, to jumping off. It scares me to death because I don't think he understands his own limitations. They say after like 6 feet or 8 feet, you really shouldn't be jumping because the pressure could break a leg. And there's a portion, there's a park right across the street from our house, and it's about 10 feet high. And they're playing tag out there oftentimes, and he jumps in front of new kids all the time. He'll go up to the top, and they think he's going down the slide, and he just jumps off. And I can't tell you how many times that kid just jumped off this thing. And he just laughs and he runs and he goes. And one of these days he's going to sprain an ankle or break a leg. But you know what? He's going to do it under my supervision. And he's going to understand that there's a consequence for an action. And my mom used to always say, I love this. Maybe it should be a new chapter in the next book is mistakes are good.
Yep.
As long as you learn from them.
Yeah.
Right. So if we don't allow our kids to fail, right? And look, I'm just going to bring it a step further. This is why there's a whole bunch of millennials sitting at home in mom and dad's basement because mom and dad didn't let them go and take any risks. So then they get to a little bit older age. They go off to college and they don't take any risk there, right? And they just float through school. They do their stuff. They're calling mommy and daddy every other day because they need that security blanket or they want to come home every other weekend, whatever that looks like. And mom and dad are like, yeah, we'll come pick you up or please come home because we want to make sure you're okay. It's not okay to make sure they're okay. Mm-hmm. I literally had the conversation with Christian on his 9th birthday. I said, hey, buddy, you know what today is? He says, what? I said, you're halfway out the door.
Yep.
And he says, what? I said, 18, man. I don't know where you're going. You can go to college. If you got a business, I don't know, but you're halfway out the door. You're halfway there. How exciting is that? He looked like fear. I said, don't worry. You're going to be prepared.
Yeah.
Go out the door. You're going to want to go out the door because you're going to be fully prepared and daddy will always be there for you, but you're not living under my roof.
I love that you said that because I always mess with our son. I said, dude,
he's close.
Like, you're fixing to get out. You're fixing to go. And I always give him a hard time. But, you know, I feel like we've done a good job raising him, preparing him for the world. But I want him to have that expectancy as well, too. You know, something to look forward. And but I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So real quick, Coach's Corner, episode 36, I kind of looked over it. It said the power of leadership and how it starts at the home. Can you speak to that?
So I think it starts with yourself, right? And this is what I love about podcasts. And I love how you acknowledge your audience at the beginning of like, hey, you're here. You're looking to empower yourself. You're looking to grow. You're looking to educate. You're looking for other resources to better yourself, right? And I think that's where leadership starts is how am I bettering myself so that I could be the best version of me in this moment for my children, right? And with that comes, right? We're going to study. We're going to research. We're going to do whatever. But we need to, as a leader, right? As we educate ourselves, we still need to listen to our gut. With all the knowledge that we pull in, listen to yourself. Trust yourself. I know you're people of faith. I'm a person of faith, right? And go to God's word. What does God's word say? Yeah. And what does your gut say around that? We all have this intuition that is God-given. And too many people are watching outside influences and they don't listen to their own gut. Listen. So for me as a leader, first you got to educate yourself. You're just not going to blindly like, hey, my gut says do this. But I think the podcast listeners as a whole are people who are educated. And once you educate yourself, just listen to your own intuition.
I love that. Cause I mean, you know, we've heard it several times in the leadership programs that we're a part of that we have free access to so much, you know, listening to let's just say a John Maxwell podcast, that's like having him in your living room.
Absolutely.
Obviously you can't have a dialogue with him, but just being able to hear his voice and allow him to speak into your life. Like we talked about earlier, it's up to you to take ownership of that and walk in that.
And have a real conversation with yourself.
Well, and have mentors, right? Have other leaders around you. You know, this to me, as we are having dialogue, right? I listened to your podcast. You know, you went and looked at my website and said, oh, there's some things here that we hadn't even thought about or even addressed, right? Let's hear the take on that. And I always say to people, like, I'm not the end all be all. This is what has worked for me. And some of it has not worked for me. And if the shoe fits, put it on, wear it. And if it doesn't, just throw it away.
Yeah.
It has to resonate with you in your gut. And I think so many of us don't, so many people just don't listen to their own intuition.
Yep. That's cool. That's key. So how to make really good parenting decisions? I think we kind of hit on that, but can you dig in a little bit more on that?
Yeah. I think it's very similar. It's almost the same exact thing, right? If we're a good leader, we're going to make good decisions, right? So it's listening. And as good leaders, what do? We listen to our team. And as I alluded to earlier, I have two polar opposite children, right? I can't parent Christian the way I parent Jaden. And I can't parent Jaden the way I parent Christian because they're two completely different individuals. So the best of leaders, what do? They find the strengths of everybody on their team and they pull from their strengths while encouraging them in other ways. So I think we need to understand our kids and not every tactic is going to work the same exact way that it worked with the other one. I mean, if I told Christian he was going to timeout, he was like beside himself for days. If I tell Jaden, and I say it in a tone like that, Jaden, just put me in timeout. I mean, he literally said that to me last week. I was like, that's obviously not working.
I love that you recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as a leader, right, you know, we need to pay attention to what we are doing and we need to adjust based on what's put in front of us.
I love one comment that I had read in your book. And I want you to speak to it just briefly because we haven't really talked a lot about the unit as mom and dad. And you're like, there are not mom things. There are not dad things. There are parenting things. Kind of speak to that and how you guys find a rhythm with one another.
Yeah. So I was a product of a single parent home. Right. And I don't know how my mother did it, to be quite frank. I mean, there are some things that I think I am excellent at. And I think there are things that my wife is absolutely phenomenal at that I'm like, I'm so glad we are on this team together because I would never even thought about approaching it this way or approaching that this way. And I'm so glad that they have the input of two parents. And you know, like at the end of the day, they get to pick the best of the best of everything that we do. But I don't think there should be limiters as to what it is. And probably the chapter that I think you're referencing is like changing diapers. I mean, it's not mom's role to change diapers. It's not dad's role to, you know, mow the lawn or to just get the money or whatever traditional or whatever society has been telling us. So when I think of changing diapers, somebody told me about 3 days before Christian was born, we were waiting outside a restaurant, we were going into dinner, and we were both waiting for tables, and they had like a 2-year-old son, and I said to, you know, my wife, Lisa, I said, you know, that's going to be our son real soon. He had an iPad, right? And iPads were fairly new at the time. And I had an iPad and I'm like, my little guy's going to be on a device and he's going to learn how to do this stuff. And the guy just says, I know you guys have been getting a lot of unsolicited advice. He goes, and you don't know me from Adam, but could I just give you one nugget that has really helped me? And I was like, shoot, if you're going to approach it like that, I'm all open to whatever you have to give me because this is going to be gold. And he said, Dad, just change diapers. Mm. He goes, it's unconditional love.
Yeah.
He goes, you're going to connect with that child and that child's going to know that you are there for him no matter what. And if you don't, he's going to start recognizing that mom's always the one who does this for him and dad's unwilling to do it. And I don't think that's the definition of unconditional love. Mm-mm. So, and then he elaborated and just said, and do that for everything because you guys don't have defined roles. Just be willing to do anything that's necessary to make sure that child feels loved and is comforted. And I think changing a diaper is the most basic thing you could do at the beginning as a parent, especially a dad, because they do know there's no conditions. I'll do anything for you.
I love that. And the reason why I wanted you to kind of speak to that while we were talking about leadership, because I feel like that's the epitome of showing your children what a real leader is someone who's willing to do whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. Alongside of your team and that you and your wife are a team and whenever you want to lead a team that you got to be willing to do the things that are dirty, mm-hmm. that are not so popular, but because we need each other.
You know, I was also thinking about how sometimes, you know, parents make the comments, even specifically dads sometimes say, well, I'm babysitting my kids.
That one kills me.
Yeah.
I mean, so, no, it's called parenting, Dad.
Yeah.
Yep. You don't babysit your own kids. It's called parenting.
Yes, absolutely.
And even when your friends, your kids' friends come over when they get a little bit older, you're not babysitting them either. You're still parenting. Mm-hmm. You're parenting as a community now.
Yes.
Now, that's one of the core things that we believe is that, you know, when you're around kids, you have the responsibility to parent them. Yeah. Now, obviously you can't discipline them the same way you discipline your kids, but you still have an opportunity to speak life.
Yep. Speak life.
Yep.
Yeah, I am. It drives my wife nuts. Why do you have to, that's their kid. No, nope. That kid's going to be associating with my kid and the rest of society for the rest of the world. And if we don't step in, if they're going to walk all over their parents, we need to let them know, hey, that's unacceptable behavior. Your mom and dad just said something. You need to listen. And then they're like, whoa, somebody from the outside said something to me. I do it all the time. Okay. It's a pet peeve of my wife's, I think. And she doesn't like it. It puts her in an uncomfortable position. And I'm like, no, I think it's our role.
Yeah.
So on the baseball field, can I speak to that just for a second?
Yeah.
On the baseball field the other day, my son, we're just starting a new season. And there's this kid that I've observed on other teams that is now on his team. Kid's a phenomenal athlete. I mean, you could just tell, but in between plays, when he's not being an athlete, he's a brat. The kid who throws the glove down, who's trying to tell his teammates what to do. He thinks he's the coach on the field because he is superior to everybody else physically. And something happened on a play and he just happened to have his, you know, baseball bag right there with me. And he's very respectful, but he just shows all of this emotion that's just wasted energy. And I said, hey, great play out there. He came over to get his bat or something because he was going up the bat. I said, can I share something with you? I said, you are a phenomenal baseball player. He's like, thank you, sir. I said, you're welcome. I said, but in between plays, you waste a lot of energy and a lot of negative energy. You know, everybody on your team looks to you for leadership. Mm-hmm. I said, you're a leader. I want you to start acting like one. He said, yes, sir. So he went up to bat and he hit the ball and he drilled one to center field. And they're 9 years old, right? So he just cranked one out to center field. And the kid in center field, he's in center field for a reason. He's not one of the best players, caught the ball. So as he's running down first baseline, he went like this. He grabbed his helmet on both sides as if he was going to throw it off. And he paused and he just walked back and he showed no emotion. So he went back and he did his thing. And then he came back over to his bag to go back out on the outfield and get his glove. And I said, hey, that was an amazing hit. He said, thank you. I said, you know what was even better than that? Mm-hmm. I saw you grab that helmet and I saw you control your emotions and I saw you lead in between plays, not just when you're up to bat. And that makes me even more proud than that hit you had. He's like, thank you, sir. We've had one game and about four practices since then. I haven't seen him throw a temper since.
That's powerful.
Right? This is one of the best kids probably in a whole league who's demonstrating all these non-leadership things in between plays just because he's a good player. And just one sentence from me. It's like people are watching and he's changed his demeanor. And I don't know that that happens. Nobody said anything to him because I've seen him for 3 years now.
Right.
Doing this stuff, watching his own dad, his own mom there. Nobody says anything to him. And one word, gentle and with love, you're an amazing player, but we need you to be a leader. Change his whole demeanor.
So is that positive, bringing awareness and reinforcing a positive? You know, and I love that she took that approach. And at a conversation she had with a kid that's only 9 years old, you know, sometimes we overlook that, you know, we think, well, they really ain't gonna make a difference. But yeah, from 9 months, having a conversation, 9 years old, just being consistent with that.
It just reinforces, you know, the truth that you shared in your book is that, you know, you speak to them like an adult, you speak to them truth. And because you are, I always tell people, you're not raising children, you're raising adults.
Mm-hmm.
And you're teaching them how to be married. You're teaching them how to respond to their bosses and to all the things in their life. And so it's so powerful. Thank you for sharing that today.
Absolutely.
Well, I really enjoyed our conversation, yeah. Ryan. If you could, you know, I see the background. Our audience can't see the background, but there are some things that I'm not aware of that you provide and you do. Can you let our audience know a little bit, you know, a little bit more in depth of what kind of services you provide, coaching, how to get connected with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's multiple ways you can, if you're looking for coaching, and again, I, you know, it's a well-rounded, I call myself an accountability coach. And you're just looking to take that next step in life. Maybe you're stuck somewhere. I'm really good at getting people to focus on their goals and start moving towards them. And that's ryanroy.me is the easiest way to get there because that's short and sweet, or it's justthefirejustdoit.com. It both gets you to the same website. If you're interested in the book, you can go to bethedadyouwishyouhad.com. and get your free copy there, free PDF or a free hard copy. You would just pay shipping and handling and I'll take care of the cost of the book. And then if I also have FBI Dads, which is a program I started at my son's school. It's called FBI Dads, which is fathers being involved. We have a tremendous group of dads, over 400 dads now that are really involved in the school. And if you want to know more about that program, as I'm about to roll it out to other schools, you could go to fbidads.com.
That's cool.
That's awesome. That's great. I love that. Well, listen, we thank you guys for taking the time to listen to this episode. Congratulations to you. And if you could rate this episode, that'd be great. Review it, share it, join our community on Facebook and Instagram, invite others to come along.
Would you like Parents Initiative to be presented in your church, your Bible study, or an event that you're hosting? Be sure to reach out to us through our website, social media platforms. The links will be found in the show notes.
Once again, we thank you, Ryan, for taking the time to be with us. And I know our audience is really going to enjoy this. Until next week.